on TV, online, and on your smartphone. This is Ticker News.
This episode of Talk Your Book is proudly brought to you by Honan, providing a complete range of insurance, risk, and financial solutions.
Fundies called me up, told me to take a look, but stay stubborn as bulls and talk their own book.
Hi, I'm Chris Judd and this is Talk Your Book, and today we're very lucky to be joined by Ryan McMillan from Merkle Tree Capital. Ryan, thanks very much for coming back on the show.
Cheers, thanks. Thanks for having me back on, Chris.
Now, most of our viewers are equity investors or interested in equities, and you know, there's always a bit of a pushback when we get some crypto content on it. But regardless of whether you're a believer or not, I think as this show goes on, it'd be good if we can illustrate just how crypto markets are influencing all sorts of real world and everyday financial markets that we're currently experiencing.
Yeah, I think this is going to be that first cycle where we see a lot of that real world use application come into play. Previous cycles have been a lot about narrative and hype, and here's gaming and metaverse, and it's like, okay, they exist, they're going to exist, but we haven't seen the real utility yet. But I think this cycle is going to be very different.
Now, you came on the show a year ago, and we like to open up opportunities for humble brags on this show, and you were bullish when a lot of people in the crypto space weren't wildly bullish, and most people outside the crypto space were convinced it was going straight to zero. Maybe just give us the humble brag. What's Merkle Tree done since, in terms of returns, since a year ago when you came on?
Yeah, thanks for acknowledging that. It was a very dark time for everybody in crypto, I think. Although I say that, I don't really mean it, because we've got complete conviction in what we're doing. And we follow about 30 different indicators that inform us where we are in the market cycle. So when I came in last time, that was a little bit after FTX had blown up and things looked pretty dark, but all of our indicators were telling us, no, it's time to get back in. The selling has pretty much stopped. These terrible things are happening and nobody's left to sell. So we started to put some risk back into the portfolio in January last year. Portfolio is up 130% over that calendar year and 160% over the last 6 months. So versus Bitcoin at 130. So some real value add in going a little bit further out into the crypto space over Bitcoin.
And you know, I've heard some different commentators talk about one of the things that made them bullish in that period was that the price stopped dropping even as the news got worse and worse. And the FTX, I think, was just about the cherry on top, where people were like, what else can go wrong in this space? Yeah. And by then, I mean, the price had already been smashed. Didn't actually drop any lower. Is that one of the things amongst others that you're looking at to say maybe the bottom's in?
It is. So Bitcoin, if we look at Bitcoin in isolation, effectively it's a commodity, right? So there's only so many, it's supply and demand. And when you get those bad news events and they keep hitting and nobody's left to sell, you know, these are really, we call them strong hands or diamond hands in crypto speak. You know, that's the bottom. And that's when you can start to allocate with a little more confidence that the market's going to turn around. Leverage players have all been wiped out. All the tourists have gone. They've all, you know, suffered some losses and they've left the space and don't want to talk about it. And it's, you know, the OGs, if you will, are still there and they know it's going to come back. And the rebuilding happens. So the bear market's a great time for projects to build and bring something new back whilst it's quiet and there's no hype before things get a bit frothy again.
And it's one thing for us to cherry pick the good results post that turning point. What I like about you guys is you're probably not in that sort of religious zealot type space where you're just convinced it's up forever. You've got a liquidity model that you stick to and you acknowledge that there will be cycles in this emerging asset class. What are those liquidity models telling you, and how long do you think this bull run could keep going for?
Yeah, that's right. So we really pay a lot of attention and respect the cycles in crypto. They've been there for a while. There's a lot of cycle indicators that help us do that. We most of our indicators right now are telling us bull market. The bull market's just beginning. So, you know, an interesting stat, whenever Bitcoin's reached a new all-time high, that happens, you know, at some point in the cycle, the price of Bitcoin has doubled within 30 days is the average time. So it's somewhere between 10 and 90 days, the price has doubled. So we think we're right in that sweet spot to really get some great returns.
And we'll maybe talk about the broader crypto market at the end of the episode, but I want to dig into what I think is the killer app for crypto currently. And not so much if you're living in Australia, but particularly if you're in third world countries, it's the case, and that's stablecoins. For viewers who aren't not that familiar with crypto, could you maybe give us the high-level view of what a stablecoin is?
Yeah, so the most common stablecoins are pegged, well, all stablecoins are pegged to the dollar. Some have done it in different ways. The ones we really like to use and the most popular ones, they'll buy treasuries to back their dollar. So you give them a dollar and they'll give you this digital dollar in their treasury. They're going to hold treasuries issued by the US government, and you can go and use that in the crypto ecosystem. What we're also seeing is not only is that being used to buy Bitcoin in the developed economy, but in those
third world countries.
Yeah, they're using the dollar to protect their assets, so they can't get physical dollars. It's very hard to get physical dollars. They come from the black market. They've got a high cost associated with them. Crypto and blockchain via stablecoins is bringing them access to US dollars. So maybe they hold Argentine pesos, which are inflating at 90-100%, that sort of thing. They can go and move into dollars really quickly. And so that's a store of value for them. So they're getting a harder currency. And we think the next natural step will be to go to Bitcoin. So, okay, dollar is doing really good in protecting my value if I'm in pesos, but if I'm in the dollar, Bitcoin's doing an even better job again than that.
And so before we go into dig a bit deeper into the use case, I think what you know there, those stablecoin companies make their money. Like they collect fiat US dollars, they invest that in short-term US government debt, and that interest is their payment. And they're now buying more US government debt than Canada, I believe. They're the seventh biggest buyer for US government debt. At a time when the US is struggling to find people to buy their bonds, China has been a net seller since 2014, I think started buying a few more recently. Japan come and go depending on their currency. Russia's not allowed to buy them. The Saudis are more interested in buying soccer teams than US government bonds to store their surplus cash now. It's a material, even in a relatively small asset class compared to some others at, a few trillion dollars now, it's still mopping up a material around US government debt. And if the crypto market gets big enough, could you see a world where those stable coins can be a genuine solution for the US for their deficit spending needs?
Yeah, this is a new marginal buyer of treasuries for the US. So at a time they really need it, we can see there's going to be more issuance coming up. The $2 trillion deficits, like you mentioned, China and other sovereigns are pulling back from funding that US deficit issue.
And commercial banks have been stuffed to the gills with these things in the US, and it's brought a significant amount of trouble on them recently as the price decreased.
And I think they're going to get stuffed with more of them as well. But in the meantime, then you've got this natural user, which is the rest of the world, can actually use it as it's a harder currency than their own. So
when you think, there's a lot of people, the gold bug's been saying for years, this system can't go on forever. And I think that's a reasonable statement. None of us really know if that's in an investable time frame or not, if it can go on for another 2 years, 5 years, 20 years, 100 years. Do you think there's a view that if we go back to gold as the world's reserve asset, that plays into China and Russia's hands, as so much of their surplus is being stored in gold? Is Bitcoin, should that become the new world's reserve asset? Is that really how the US smashes China and Russia in this Cold War, because they've really hitched their wagon to gold?
Increasingly, it is becoming a geopolitical asset. So the US holds quite a lot of Bitcoin. They've confiscated it from different frauds that have happened in the past. You might remember Silk Road as well. That was a huge amount.
170,000 Bitcoin, is that right?
That's right. So they've got at least 200,000 Bitcoin.
Okay.
And they keep telling the market they're going to sell, and they've sold very little. So say though, I think they've clocked what's going on here. It's definitely a geopolitical asset. It's very similar qualities to gold, except it's got absolute scarcity. So it's probably even, has a better store of value than gold does. So
the big thing for me is if you're buying gold, you're not buying that with a US stablecoin that's actually backed by US government debt. That's the issue, isn't it? I mean, we're seeing China and more use that gold to de-dollarize. The fact that crypto's priced in US dollars, it's an interesting thing that I just don't think a lot of people speak about. Is that fair?
No, and I think it's really smart at this particular juncture as well, where we're approaching something called fiscal dominance. So that really means what the central bank is doing is a little bit less important, because the governments around the world, but particularly the US is the most obvious, they're spending so much more money than they're taking in taxes. So that fiscal situation is dominating the monetary flow. The things you really want to hold in that environment, going into that environment, are gold and Bitcoin. And we think Bitcoin is on an exponential adoption curve, making it even more attractive than gold.
And I feel we've isolated the equity bros because we're talking crypto, and I feel now we're isolating the crypto bros because we're not telling what comes next. So we'll get to that in a second. I just want to differentiate one more thing that I think a nuance that gets missed. Like, I think gold and potentially Bitcoin are good hedges for monetary inflation. They've proved not to be great hedges for high street inflation. And is it worth differentiating between the two? Like, I think oil, copper,
yep,
these sort of commodities that are used in everyday living, you know, I think they're more relevant if you're worried about high street inflation, which is probably what we're coming out of. I think perhaps the moves in gold and Bitcoin, perhaps they're telling us that monetary inflation is down the pike. And that's what Powell's really alluded to, at a time when interest rates perhaps going to be coming down, perhaps sooner than what people thought.
So the way I look at things is, you'll have heard the term monetary policy works with long and variable lags. Well, I see the same thing in terms of that money creation. It takes about the same amount of time, 18 months, to turn into that CPI high street inflation. So Bitcoin and gold will move in the earlier phase, giving you the protection for later on. But because CPI prints at 3.1% this month, don't expect gold or Bitcoin or anything for that matter to then follow it immediately at the same level. So you really need to zoom out and look over longer periods of time, not talk about daily, monthly, even annual. You want us to talk about a period. So here's a period of high inflation. Gold worked really well. This period that we've just gone through, Bitcoin's worked really well, and so is gold. And I think there's a strong possibility this is our first wave, right? And if we're going for another wave, which looks like the 70s again, potentially we are, the inflation looks like it's sort of bottoming at the moment. I want to be holding Bitcoin and gold, right? And me, I want to be holding Bitcoin. Gold is for, you know, the boomers maybe, and Bitcoin is probably for everybody else and for the boomers.
We'll be back with more Talk Your Book after this short break.
On TV, online, and on your smartphone, this is Ticker News.
This episode of Talk Your Book is proudly brought to you by Honan, providing a complete range of insurance, risk, and financial solutions.
Fundies called me up, told me to take a look, but stay stubborn as bulls and talk their own book. Get the money.
This is Talk Your Book, and we're lucky to have Ryan McMillan from Merkle Tree. Ryan, I think we've gone through a bit about the stable coins and a bit about recent history. Looking forward, what are sort of the next milestones that you really think could lead to the next re-rate? And obviously, I guess it's not so much looking for, but probably worth touching on the Bitcoin ETFs, because that seems to have had just such a huge influence on crypto markets.
Yeah, that ETF has been a huge catalyst. It's been 10 years in the making since the Winklevosses first applied about 10 years ago for an ETF, and it was a real dogfight to get it through the SEC. Eventually, the law, the courts had to decide on pushing it through. So, we were really bullish on that. We thought this has the potential to double the Bitcoin price. I think it's been a much greater success than I think even the most bullish Bitcoiners could have hoped for. Effectively, this opens up $100 trillion capital market to be able to invest in Bitcoin. And so we're just starting to see the start of those flows. There was $1 billion net flows last week on one day. So,
which is just huge, isn't it? So you annualize that, and obviously it's not going to be the same every day, but 360 odd billion, and the market cap of Bitcoin's what, 1.4 trillion, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. That's broadly right. The BlackRock ETF, most successful ETF launch in the last 30 years, probably ever, I think, is how it works. The data sort of cuts out a little bit. Fidelity, the second best of all time, right? So there they are, combined, all nine of them together. Expectations were here, and result was way up here. And those flows aren't slowing down. We're seeing outflows out of GBTC.
Yeah.
That's sort of liquidations from the last cycle being wound up and moved on.
So, and their fee structure is quite, it's really high when you compare it to BlackRock and the other ETFs, isn't it? So yes. 2%, isn't it? Management
1.5 versus 1.5. 25 bips for the others, even free for the first 6 months. So it's way out there. They're just trying to protect their margin there. They need the cash flow for that business to support some other things going on there. Mind you, the prices, they've lost 40% of their Bitcoin, but price has gone up by that much. So the fee's still the same for them. So
and it's banking on people not monetizing their taxes. So some people don't want to sell that because they don't want to pay at a tax event. So they're just going to ride that 2% for a bit longer, or 1.5%.
That's right. When this asset has 150% annual returns, that's the average return, to take 1.5 off is not going to kill anyone.
And so talk to us about the Bitcoin halving. How far away is that from happening?
Yeah, we're a month away now. So this is the other really strong catalyst we talk about every 4 years. This is like a marketing event for Bitcoin in some ways, because each time it's happened, there's been a really strong bull run. There is obviously the mechanics of supply and demand going on here. For those that don't know, the Bitcoin halving is a halving of the rewards for each block printed by the miners. So that equates to less supply hitting the market from those miners, dropping from 900 a day at the moment to 450 in a month's time. When the ETFs alone are demanding 4,000, 5,000, 6,000, 7,000, that's going to be 20 times potentially what we're going to be seeing in the future, just a month away.
And talk to us about the ETH ETF. I know there's been applications for it, none have been granted as yet. How are you feeling about that? And do you think that'll eventually get up?
Yeah, I think it'll eventually get up. I'm not super bullish on the May timeframe. So May is when it is supposed to go live, or that's the last approval date for the SEC. They either have to reject or approve at that point. You can draw the parallels to the Bitcoin ETF being forced through. It has a futures ETF like Bitcoin did, and ultimately the legal argument was a futures ETF is no different to a spot ETF, and what we're looking at is a spot here. For ETH, having got a futures 6 months or so ago. So that's the case for it, but on the flip side, it's a little bit different to Bitcoin. The SEC hasn't explicitly come out and said it is a commodity like they have for Bitcoin. So there might be a couple of attack vectors for SEC to say, no, this is different. What about staking? What about proof of stake? And we also haven't seen them engage with all the applicants yet either. So December last year, we saw furious activity from the SEC responding to all the applicants who had their Bitcoin ETF application in, and we haven't seen that yet for ETH.
And now, I don't encourage anyone to invest in crypto or any asset class for that matter, but I think crypto, it makes sense to invest some time at least to get your head around what's happening and how it can potentially affect crypto markets, but also real world markets. If people are open to just learning more, where can they find you and find some other sort of information resources if they do want to have an explore?
Yeah, it is a super powerful portfolio allocation tool. I think all portfolios should have 1-2% allocation. I'll leave some comments in the YouTube, in the comments there, and there'll be some links to some information where people can start their journey if they haven't already. Here's some podcasts you might want to listen to, 30 minutes time, and I think you'll get a lot out of it.
Awesome. Ryan, well, thanks very much for coming back on, and congrats on a brilliant 12 months.
Cheers. Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, mate.